everyone. Welcome to Rewatchable episode 113, a special Not Another Teen Wolf podcast edition of Rewatchable. No, that's a joke just in case you're like, no, turning them off. But coincidentally, we do have quite a few members of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast on the episode this week, plus our very own Ariana. As one of our newbies, we are going to be recapping The Legend of Korra, obviously, not Teen Wolf, episodes 5 of season 1, Spirit of Competition, and episode 6, And the Winner Is. And joining us today is myself, host Natalie, superfan. Other superfan joining us is Donya, member of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. Hello, Donya.
Hello.
And newbie Karen, as well as Ariana, and Karen is also obviously in Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. And I don't think that the three of us have ever been on a rewatchable together. We've been in the show together, but I don't think we've ever done an episode together. So it's a strange reunion, and you'll have to just make sure that we don't go off track, Ariana, and keep our eyes on the prize, basically. The prize being Pro Bending Championship Tournament, obviously. The contact information, if you'd like to reach us on the podcast, is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com if you want to email us in if any feedback or comments. You can reach us on Twitter, which is re_watchable. You can comment on this post on Hypeable for the podcast, or you can join us on Tumblr, which is rewatchable podcast without any spaces, I think. Is that right, Donya? Do you happen to know?
Yes, that's correct.
As rewatchable podcast. Yeah.
Cool. Not a problem. I should probably follow them because I don't. So therefore, I don't know.
I'm telling Brittany.
I'll do that right now. I'll follow them, and then I won't make the mistake anymore. All right. So going in hard. Chapter 5 of Legend of Korra, The Spirit of Competition. In this chapter, there is so much teen angst because Bolin likes Korra, but Korra likes Marco, but Marco digs evil, hot, rich Asami, except when he's fantasizing about Korra instead. So Korra tells Marco, I can't take my eyes off of you, but he wants to stick to the status quo, so she goes on a date with Bolin, and it's like the start of something new. But Korra, oh god, but Korra's a sexual wildebeest, so when she gets back and tells, and Marco tells her that she's what he's been looking for, they bop to the top. How many... You've stuck a lot of metaphors in here, Ariana. You've stuck a lot of teen movie references. But then Bolin catches them and cries that he's breaking free. And then they have to play basketball, but no one can get their head in the game until the end when they put aside their hormones to decide that they're all in this together. So...
Oh my God.
This together. Okay, we're not going to do this. High School Musical, the Korra edition, discussion points. So the first big question about the plot, you know, the romantic drama of this episode is, like, newbie people, Karen and Ariana, do you guys feel invested in any of the ships yet? Like, who did you like the best together? We saw a bit of everyone except, you know, the mythical idea of Bolin Asami, I guess. But this, like, love... love quadrangle is quite dramatic already. So how did you guys feel about the ships involved so far? I guess Karen, what romantic idea did you like the best from the episode?
Can I say none of them?
Me too, Karen.
Okay, good. I was so tired of the back and forth and the I like him, but, you know, he likes her and he likes me and, you know, this whole confusing thing. And I'm like, look, you have much bigger things to worry about right now.
It's weird because usually I like revel in this like teenage stuff, but it's just like too soon for them to be having this drama.
Exactly.
Like, it's ridiculous. I can't take it seriously.
Fair enough. I would maybe go on a limb and say that. I would go out on a limb and say that that is a valid reading in terms of they're idiot teenagers and they don't deserve to be taken seriously, maybe. That's kind of how I feel about it. I don't know, Donya, at the time when you first watched it, how did you feel about this?
I really just wasn't invested in any of the relationships in terms of like in a shipping in a romantic way. I just didn't care. I was like going, really? I haven't had enough time with any of these characters being together to be invested in them as like any of them having like a romantic potential. Because I feel like there needs to be a lot more seeing them interact with each other before I become invested. So for me, it was like it was too quick. I didn't discount it that I wouldn't at some point potentially become invested in one of the relationships. I just remember being like, we're 5 episodes in. Really?
I was kind of just like, why? Like, I'll tell you what I was, number one, I was like, Marco, get your head in the game. Like, he's like, oh, but I like her, but I like her. Oh, but I'm too hot. How will I suffer this? Like, you know
I
what
know.
I mean? Like, he's just, I'm just like, shut up. But okay. Number one, I'm like, why does it all have to be romantic? I don't get why Cora went on a quote-unquote date with Bolin, like, and then quote-unquote let him down or whatever. Like, I don't understand American dating culture. This isn't America, but it's like pretend Avatar is made by Americans, whatever. I don't get why you have to label something like going out and eating a bunch of noodles noisily with someone you're not romantically interested in. Why do you have to be like, sure, I'll go on a date with you? Why not just be like, yeah, I want to hang out. Like, I'm not like, can't, like, you're my friend, let's go and hang out. Like, why do you have to label it a date and then let someone down being like, actually, no romance? Like, I don't get that. Can anyone explain that to me?
To be fair to Bolin, I don't think that he wasn't, like, I think he was doing the casual, like, let's hang out with the potential of maybe more later. If not, that's fine. Like, and I think Cora was very like, yeah, sure, we'll hang out. Like, it wasn't like a date, but I think he was more upset with his brother because he made it really clear to his brother that he was into Cora.
Yeah, totally.
So I think that's what upset him. It's like,
I
that is messed up.
I agree with that. But he's like, just the way that they're like, oh, a date. Like, you know, like, do you want to go out in a date type capacity? I don't understand. We don't do that generally, unless you're like 35 and are like meeting someone on the internet, which is like a valid life choice, but whatever. At that teenage age, it's more just like everyone hangs out and no one's like, do you want to specifically go on a date with me? Like, with the idea that we might have a romance, like, it's like everyone hangs out. And then through the process of hanging out, you're like, oh, I have a crush on that person. And then you start texting and then you'd be like, do you want to go out with me? Like, are you my boyfriend now? Like, via text, probably. That's what happens when you're like 17 and stupid. But anyway, and there's very, very little of this. I'm going to set up time where we might suss out if we're potentially romantically interested in you. I don't understand that at all. So anyway, let's go on to the specifics of some of the ships addressed. Marco and Cora, for example, Ariana, do you want to read your commentary for this? Because I'm curious about that.
I'm frustrated because I feel like they were set up specifically to, like, either appease or to continue trolling the Zutara shippers. Because Mako, I keep saying Mako like the shark, but Mako, he's, like, literally a poor man's Zuko 2.0. He's Zuko but poor. And then they have, like, the fire. Yes. And they have, like, the fire and water. But, like, to me, they aren't, like, Zutara at all. Not the reasons I liked Zutara. Because I feel like it's more like Cora is being the Aang and Mako's being the Katara. And Cora's just like, love me now. And Mako's like, oh, maybe. And it's just, I don't like desperation. I think that's why I don't like them.
I agree. Yeah. Does anyone else have any thoughts about Marco and Cora at this point?
I'm still stuck on poor man Zuko.
It's true. It's like I wasn't on the episode last week, but I love that Mr. Sato being like, so I hear you're dirt poor. I forgot about that until I rewatched the episodes, and I just died. Like, it's so. Yes, so he is literally poor man Zuko. He is literally Zuko, but poor. I do agree. I mean, I think they're very different people, and mainly that I don't particularly like Marco at this point, in that I think that he's got too much ego, and he's like, oh, no, I'm too pretty, and too many girls like me, and, oh, I'm too muscly when I work in the engine room, and it's just like, get over yourself. But never mind him. How about Bolin and Cora, like, as friends, or as a potential romantic partner, like, you know, down the line, realizing that this is actually the one? Because I think Bolin is tons of fun. I think that he has a really cool confidence, which is leveled out as not total cockiness, but he has the kind of cockiness that makes you, you know, someone fun and charming, leveled with a massive side of insecurity, which makes you know that it's not like real confidence and it's okay that they're not actually an egomaniac. And I really enjoy him. He reminds me a lot of a couple of my other favorite fictional characters as well, some of which probably won't make sense to a lot of people on this podcast or listeners, but never mind that. But yeah, Ariana, how about your commentary for this one?
Well, he's fun because he's confident, but not at the expense of other people. Like, he knows what he wants, and he's much more decisive than Mako is. I mean, honestly, I feel out of the three potentials that we have right now, him and Cora are probably the best, only because they actually get along without drama, too much drama.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I, like, actually, they might get boring. Like, they would be good in real life, but I think watching on the show, they would probably be boring. Because they would get along.
Yeah, it'd be like one of those couples that they're like, they hang out and they have a really good time together and they're good friends with each other, and then they probably go home and have, you know, nice sex and they have no problems, and people don't really make TV shows about that.
Yeah.
Karen, how did you feel about, I mean, I know that you were also annoyed with all of the ships so fast or not invested, but how did you feel about sort of Bolin and Cora attempting to date?
I like how much they have in common and how similar they are, but I think it's one of those things where it's like, we really like each other and we really get along very well, but it's better for our relationship as two people to not date. Like, I can definitely see them, like Ariana put, that they're kind of being like bros, and that's sort of how I envision it. I think they can end up being really good friends and they can confide in each other, but I just don't see that, like, romantic undertone yet. I mean, maybe that'll change, but
yeah, I was just very irritated by, obviously, the last ship is Mako and Asami, who are dating properly and publicly and acknowledgedly, about which Ariana has just said they are too pretty together and it makes me uncomfortable. They are incredibly hot, and it is frustrating. I like that Asami doesn't, well, not that she doesn't suspect anything, because Mako is, and it's not exactly she doesn't expect anything, but I like that she's not painted as like, oh, she's like the evil, you know, oh, she's like, oh, hi, Cora, if you know what I mean. She's not like, oh, the girl on my boyfriend's team, like, oh, you know, she's not the like kind of sly bitch girlfriend. Like, she has no reason to suspect, you know.
She's so pretty. You think she's threatened by Cora?
That's true. Like, she has no reason to suspect Cora as a threat. But then again, why would she?
Like an animated Adriana Lima. She's, like, so beautiful. She does.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know how Mako and Asami together, I'm mainly just, like, Asami is great. And you know, they don't know each other that well yet. But I'm kind of like, Mako, why are you being like, oh, maybe I like Cora. Oh, No, I'm dating Asami, but no, no one else can date Cora, if you know what I mean. It's like, I've got a girlfriend, but no one else can date Cora because she's also mine. It's just like, oh, okay, Mako, calm down. So I don't know, Donya, how do you feel about the Mako and Asami kind of situation currently?
See, I really like Asami, so the thing is, I like her interactions with Mako. Like, I really, really like that, and I like how she's just completely natural with that relationship, and she's just taking it like as it is, like any new relationship is, where you're kind of like just properly getting to know each other and spend time together and go out and stuff like that. But Mako's the one who really irritates me, because I'm just like, really, you're gonna have a scenario where you're like, this is my toy, but this is also my toy, and you don't get to play with this toy because it's mine, because I said share kind of situation with, like, Cora. Like, that really irritates me beyond belief.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I like her. She's doing nothing wrong. That's the thing. She's not painted as like, oh, Cora is the obvious option because Asami, she might be hot, but she's like, she's trying to change you, man, or whatever. Like, Asami is in the corner doing literally nothing wrong. So it makes it kind of worse that he's like that about Cora, basically, yeah. In my opinion. Also, he's just a selfish, greedy, hot guy who's used to taking first place and used to his brother taking second place.
Okay, no. To be fair to Mako, I feel like everyone's been really mean to him, like, the past few episodes, and I do like him. I see where he's coming from. Like, he's been poor his whole life, and he feels a huge responsibility to take care of his brother, and so I really like that. Like, I like him as a person. I just feel like he's a typical teenage boy and not super mature about his relationships with girls. But I think he's a good guy.
Yeah. I mean, we'll hope so.
Oh my gosh, maybe he's a mom, guys. Maybe he's a mom.
He's a mom. You solved it. He's a mom. My favorite ship of the episode is Pabu and Noodles, though, obviously. because cute. Because amazing. Going on from that, you know, romance aside, obviously the brothers fight about Cora and stuff, but then they make up at the end. They're brothers, you know, because they're always going to be okay. And I mean, I think that this was a nicer moment for the episode. The idea of the sibling relationships as opposed to the romance being important. And I really enjoyed that, basically them making up. Was there a point that you guys thought that Bolin and Mako might have, like, an ongoing feud and that Bolin might, like, turn against them because they betrayed him or anything like that?
I never thought that Bolin was going to turn against him, but I was really afraid that this was going to be something that was going to happen over several episodes, and the fact that at the end of this, everyone was sort of like, sorry, guys, like, yeah, we kind of all screwed up, and except for Bolin. Bolin didn't really do anything bad. But I was afraid that it was going to be one of those things like, you just need to talk it out, do that already, and they did by the end of the episode, so I was really happy that there was, like, a twist on that usual conflict.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. It would have been very annoying to be dragged out, I'm not going to lie. Donya, how about you? How do you kind of feel about, I guess, Mako and Bolin at this point and how that's sort of just what their relationship is, I guess, compared to other sibling relationships that we've seen on the show before?
I actually really, really love their relationship. I think it's one of the highlights for me in, like, especially the first few episodes, because for me it was... Like, from episode one, even the first time around that I watched Cora, like, it was the, I guess, relationship that I got most invested in quickly. Because, I mean, I guess, because that it has that history there already, you know, they've grown up with each other. You kind of get the sense of, like, in their interactions, like, that kind of history. So I really, really just love their relationship and when they kind of, even when they butt heads and then when they make up, I just really, really like it altogether. I think it's, as someone, I think it was Ariana put in the doc, it's like the one thing that they always get right on this show.
Yeah, no, true.
Relationships.
Yeah. Ariana, how about you? Like, towards the end or just in general, did you fear for the relationship of Mako and Bolin, or did you think it was going to cause, like, a brother versus brother feud and that he would go off and join Aman or something and take down the Avatar and or take her bending away?
I mean, if it had, I think I would have lost a lot of respect for this show because I'm pretty over the shipping. I hope that, like, gets better soon. But I really appreciate the relationship. Like, I mean, in Avatar, obviously, none of my ships, like, came to fruition, but I really always liked the sibling relationships, especially Katara and Sokka and Zuko and Azula, so I like this so far.
One thing I just wanted to ask as well that I just put in my own notes for the episode was actually just what this episode sort of made you feel or reveal about, I guess, what it revealed to you about the personalities of the main three. I'll say the main three, like Cora, Bolin, and Marco. Like, were you kind of, for example, you know, were you sort of surprised that Bolin was that confident about, you know, because when he's like, you know, like, she's fun, I'm fun, she's beautiful, I'm gorgeous, like that he kind of had a relative amount of confidence when he's kind of being portrayed maybe as someone who would be like, you know, thinking of himself as not super confident, like he sort of flips back and forth, or Cora's absolute desperation, like she kind of takes that advice from Pema when she finds out about what Pema did to get Tenzin, and she's kind of like really weirdly earnestly desperate about telling Marco that she thinks they're meant for each other. And then Marco's kind of behavior with the two, you know, oh, I like you, oh, I like you, and kind of being caught up about that. So I don't know, Karen, do you feel like this episode kind of revealed any character traits that you were surprised by or kind of interested by?
I was definitely surprised by Cora's attitude, just because she's been so, like, wrapped up in her avatar training and trying to make her airbending work. She's a strong fighter, and I feel like, you know, there's nothing wrong, obviously, with having, like, romantic feelings for somebody else, but I feel like considering what happened in the last episode with Amon and everything that she needs to be concentrating on, to kind of, like, fall into this very, like, base sort of, oh, you know, I need to profess my love to this guy because, you know, that's the most important thing on my mind right now, I think it kind of simplifies her character, and I didn't really appreciate that. I like the fact that she did confront him with her feelings because that doesn't always happen, and I prefer things to be very, like, honest and upfront. But it just seemed too much in the beginning. Like we said, we're only 5 episodes in, and all of a sudden we've got, you know, this love quadrangle, and I just feel like it's really unnecessary.
It's a bit Glee, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Donya, how about you at this point? Like, do you remember being sort of surprised at the characters, or like being like, oh, I didn't think that their personality was like that, or anything like that?
I think I was a little bit surprised at how quickly, how quickly Cora would just like jump on it to be like, oh yeah, no, I totally like you. We're meant to be together forever, kind of thing. And I was like, going, wait, what?
Back, really?
Yeah, but I kind of at this point, I think I was thinking, like, at 5 episodes in, after like all of Avatar The Last Airbender and how, like, really well paced it was and how they kind of built things up really, really slowly and they just let everything happen, I think, organically, I guess, is the best way to describe it. The kind of rushed feeling with, like, everyone in Korra was what really threw me off more than the actual characters' reactions. It kind of felt like, well, maybe with a little bit more build-up, those reactions would have made more sense, but it just felt like they were trying to get from like point A to point B as quickly as possible, and it just didn't feel like a natural progression to things, which is what kind of threw me off a lot. And I mean, I guess it's still like rewatching it, I'm still like, oh god, like I thought that this happened, like it took a few more episodes to like get to that point, but then I kind of started rewatching it and I was like going, wow, no, it really did move quickly. So I think that's what takes me by surprise more than the actual character reactions. I feel like they could have been earned a little better rather than it just happening like one after the other.
Well, at this point, I'm sort of wondering if it was purposeful trolling like Ariana kind of suggested, or, you know, with Zuko and Katara, like, you know, all of the shipping drama of Avatar, you know, had to be quite, I don't know if the creators found that like funny or stressful, if you know what I mean, but they might have been like, lol, you want shipping, we're gonna troll you with the most ridiculous shipping episode of all time, if you know what I mean. I don't know, I'm wondering if there might be a case for that. But going forward, favorite scenes in the episode, as well as our favorite quotes. Now, my favorite scene, besides from fat, swollen, drunken noodle Pabu, which I just find hysterical, is the introduction of the emo goth pro-bending team, the Wolf Bats, just because I just died. When the first time I watched this show, I'm like, oh my god, it's a bunch of emos. I can't deal with it. I can't deal with it. And it's not like I like a lot. It's not like this character is like my favorite character. I'm like, oh my god, he's so great and here he is or anything. I just found imagery and I just found them hysterically funny. So I have a weird attachment to the emo goth Wolf Bats, and that was my favorite moment of the episode. Karen, how about you?
Mine, and I'm gonna let you know going forward that every single one of my favorite scenes probably in some way is going to involve Pabu, but
isn't he the best?
No offense
to Momo and Apu, but no offense to Momo and Apu, but Pabu is like my number one boo. Like, I love him so much.
He's so adorable, and the little noises he makes, I want him so badly. But it was Noodle Drunk Pabu, but it was the part where he's dragging himself across the floor because he is literally too round to use his legs.
He's an idiot. I love him. Ariana, how about you for your favorite moment?
Mine was when Tenzin's kids were trying to help Korra, you know, like, get her groove on with Mako. And, oh, they told that fabulous story, if you guys remember, where, like, the princess, she, like, threw herself into a volcano or something.
She should totally do that.
Yeah.
Yes. I absolutely love that story.
Yes. She's like, it's so romantic. And then, you know, and then Tenzin's wife came and she was like, oh, yeah, I stole him away from his girlfriend. And we'll get back to that next episode.
Yeah, so. I will say one of the best moments of this is the reaction of all of three girls, like Nora, Iki, and Korra, all being like, wow, when Pamma tells her story. I think it's so funny. But yeah, Donya, how about you?
Mine was going off like all of the noodle drunk stuff when Mako goes to find Bolin and is like having to drag him away from like the restaurant. I just love that scene so much.
Yeah, that entire basically interaction of him, drunk, possibly not just on noodles. They probably didn't show the bottles of sake that are probably slightly off screen because this is a children's show.
Yeah.
But that actually tied into going into the favorite quotes. Mine was from basically that, just that entire interaction basically where he's pitching a fit at Mako and Marco's just like, I told you that dating a teammate was a bad idea, and he's just like, you're a bad idea. And I just, you know, I understand that they're not exactly the same characters as, you know, as Sokka and, you know, Katara and everyone, but there is certainly an element of why Sokka was in the show in why Bolin is in the show, and I imagine Sokka also crying into a bowl of noodles and telling someone that they're a bad idea. So I don't want to compare them too directly, but I enjoy that kind of humor and I think it was cute and ridiculous. Karen, how about you?
Mine's just when Korra was like, I'll unnecessarily rough you up. And just like some of the turns of phrases in this show, sort of like, you're a bad idea, that sort of thing. It just, I don't know, it makes me laugh. I always really enjoy the humor on both of these shows. And I just think it's really funny.
And then, Ariana, how about your quote?
I really liked it when, I almost said Katara, Korra. Straight up went to Mako and she was like, look, I really like you and I think we were meant for each other, because that just reminded me so much of Aang, and I was like, oh my gosh, this girl, she's so sheltered, like, I really like you, we should date right now. So
yeah,
that's why I liked it, because she had a little bit of Aang in her.
It's true, it is very Aang. It's ridiculous, but it is very Aang. And then Donya, how about you?
Mine was the little radio presenter being like, which reminds me, this match is brought to you by our sponsor, Flamio Instant Noodles, noodliest noodles in the United Republic.
Okay.
It's the Flamio, you know, bit that gets
cackled at that.
You know how Karen says that like all of her moments to be going forward are going to involve Pabu, it's really hard for me not to do, not every time to do a quote from the commentary man. I don't know if you guys know I love the commentary man. It's like a lot. I find it hysterically funny every time. So
I don't have your restraint.
So I will probably be choosing him a lot going forward as well. Right, second episode, and the winner is Chapter 6. In this chapter, Amon makes threats against the World Cup, but Korra's crew want to play anyway, so the Avatar shows up at the council meetings to tell the world leaders how important sports and her problems are, and they're like, fine. And also, BT Dubs, just so you're aware, Tenzin and Chief Beifong are star-crossed soulmates. Evil Hot Rich Asami shows up at the World Cup to Marco out, but then she leaves to go put her Amon mask and pay off the referees to make sure Korra's crew loses so she can take away the douchey frat guy's bending instead and make a grand statement. Oh god, are we doing this? Are we doing theories about Amon? Are we theorizing that Asami is Amon?
I'm saying Asami is Amon.
Okay,
Asami is Amon. That's my call.
Okay.
I mean, I have a different theory, but you know, whatever.
I'm curious about everyone's theories now. All right, so Asami was at the pro bending bowl and then mysteriously disappeared. More proof that Ariana's right and she's totally a man. I mean,
yes.
Okay, if that's
she's that, evil, guys. Right. She's like, she shows up out of nowhere. She's like, I'm so pretty. Let me give you all this money because obviously your pro bending is so important to the cause because the Avatar is on your team, right? I think I heard that somewhere. Oh, right. Uh huh. Yeah. She's a man.
I don't believe that she's Amon, but I will say I do not trust her. I do not like her. I think she's really kind of, like, sly, and I feel like there's got to be an ulterior motive here, and she's playing it really well, but I don't trust her.
I mean, I seriously hope that she's evil, because I need a Nuzula, because I'm, like, not invested in any of these children yet, so I'm, like, hoping there's more to her than meets the eye.
Interesting. I mean, I don't think that I can say I never theorized at this point that she was Amon. I'll give you that much. I never was like, oh, it might be Asami, but maybe I wasn't thinking hard enough about it.
Yeah, I didn't think Asami was Amon at this point either. Like, I just didn't suspect her of, like, anything. I just thought I've always really just liked
Asami. I thought
she
was just a really big pro bending fan. Yeah, like, she so was like, I. Oh my god, I've met some cool people and I have more money than them. Let me give them my money.
It's nobody like, does do that though. It's so
I'd
weird.
I'd do that. If I was like, if I had like billions of dollars and I met my like my favorite band, but my favorite band had like a shitty van and like couldn't like. Like, you know, like that they were like some little like no ones, but I loved them from the internet or something. I would like totally give all my money and like give them to us.
I kind of assumed at this point in Korra that Asami was really sheltered, but in a different way to Korra. So she was a little bit more like socially well adjusted, I guess, than Korra is. But she kind of has latched onto these guys and is kind of like, oh, how do I keep them in my life kind of thing. Oh, well, they really, really like pro bending. Maybe I'll just sponsor them. And then, you know, I've
She's
gotten
buying friends, guys. Yeah. Duh. Like every poor little rich girl.
That was kind of, I think that was my assumption at this point more than like a nefarious purpose.
Yeah. You know, but there's, you know, I think that the points that Ariana has made are pretty good. It's just that I didn't necessarily notice them the first time round. She did mysteriously disappear. She could be out there supporting the equalists, who knows. Because, I mean, she's an example, I guess, of a non-bender, as far as we know, who isn't, like, all like, oh my god, bending is evil. She's like, bending is awesome. So maybe she's trying to live vicariously through them, if you know what I mean, by sponsoring them. Amon basically, at the end of the match, like, you know, they have, all, you know, the championship, etc., and Amon takes away the bending from the winning team, the goth goth wolf bat. And Aaron has said she knows she's supposed to care more about this storyline, but you sort of feel like, do the anti-bangers have a point to death? And if you're 100% certain, 100% honest, all you cared about was Toph's kid crushing on Aang's kid, which we'll definitely have to get to in depth in a moment. It was definitely a highlight. And it is, I mean, I feel like that this is actually, but the bending removal and Aman and everything with him, I feel like it is a very large issue to be dropped in very quickly. I mean, I know that kind of, you know, right at the start of Harry Potter, it's like, oh, Voldemort's going to have to be killed one day. Or even start at, you know, the start of Atla, they're like, oh, we found out about the Fire Lord and we must stop him. But this is a really specific, really, like, currently occurring. It's not like, oh my god, the Fire Lord's going to do something at the end of the summer. It's like, this is a really, like, specific kind of, like, I guess, like, abusive thing that these people are, like, currently doing, like, these big displays of power. Like, it's basically terrorism, like, the way that they were threatening the bending arena. But I don't know. It is, like, how do you guys feel at the moment about the equalists and the bending removal? Like, I don't know. It's just, it's a lot quite early on. I mean, the seasons are shorter, like, so where this is halfway through season one. But Karen, how do you feel about, like, that major conflict at the moment?
Well, we talked a little bit about this on the last episode. We really felt like, Brittany was the other newbie that was on last week with me, and we really feel like the show's moving so fast already. And it's kind of difficult to be like, you know, like you were saying, it's happening right now. It's not something that's going to be happening at the end of the summer. So what else is going to come next? And I kind of feel like I'm really unprepared, which is a good thing because I want to have those twists and everything. But Aman is a scary dude already.
Yeah. I mean, does anyone have any further thoughts about how basically what it means, I guess, to be a bender versus a non-bender and actually having, like, abilities? If people are so freaked out by, like, again, it's something that I feel like we have already talked about at length, but, like, you know, if say that you have magic powers, but there are other normal people who lead perfectly normal lives without magic powers, and then someone's like, your magic powers are getting taken away. It's like taking away a bonus, not taking away a normal, you know, not taking away something that's, you know, intrinsically needed for survival, if you know what I mean. There's just quite a bit of discussion, I think, to be had about our identity, you know, as just more than just a bender. Like, it always made me interesting, again, to compare to Harry Potter, that they don't call people. They're not like a man or a woman. They're like, oh, that witch, you know, you're the smartest witch of your age that I've known. Not, you're the smartest girl of your age, if you know what I mean. Like, it's really, they're really hung up on the identity as a whatever you are. So do you think that they're putting too much focus on your identity as a bender and that people should be, like, more chill about whether they can bend or not? Or would you feel like a big part of you was sort of ripped away? Donya, how about you?
I think it's a really, really difficult thing sometimes to talk about because then you have to break it down to, like, how do benders feel about, like, their bending, particularly, like, when it's taken away from them? Do they feel like that's a huge part of who they are? Like, they've lost an entire part of themselves? Because they're born with that power, like, inherent in them. Like, it's something that they've lived with their entire lives, and having it literally ripped away from them, then you kind of have this thing like, well, whether or not it's almost like a privilege, almost, like it's something additional to them, something that just, it doesn't stop them from living if it's taken away, but it's all they've ever known in their lives. So it's kind of a really, really difficult thing to kind of pass. It's honestly, I think it's such a huge part of them that having it taken away is obviously going to be devastating to them, because it's almost like having a sense it's not that they won't be able to continue living, but they've lost, like, what would I guess be like the equivalent of one of their senses. It's like an additional part of them. So it's kind of, yeah, that's kind of how I see it. It's not that they'll ever, like, they'll stop living if they lose it, but that they'd have to, like, adjust their whole worldview to kind of be able to live.
Something that really reminds me of is, like, gymnasts. Like, I think, like, I love Dancing with the Stars, and they had the world winner of 2008 on there this year, the gymnast girl, and she was talking about how, like, until she was 18 when she competed, that's all she did, that was her entire life, was devoted to gymnastics. But then she won, and then, like, right after she won, she was, like, too old, you know, like, because your body deteriorates. And she had to, like, refocus and think, like, who was she without gymnastics? And that's kind of what this reminds me of, when you focus your whole life on something and then,
I think
your prime, it's over.
I think that that's a really good comparison, that the, like, relatively short-lived careers of athletes. I think that's a really, really good example, because it's not, because no matter which way you spin it, unless it's canonical that, but, like, a bender without their bending is actually, like, less than a normal person, like, that it actually, like, physically weakens them and basically makes them disabled, as opposed to just down on the level with everyone normal, unless it, like, it actually does something more to them so that their physical self or their brain or their body is actually weakened beyond the normal state of living. I think that's a really good comparison. It's more of that of, like, a super skilled athlete whose career is over, or, you know, when they're 25 or, you know, 18 or whatever, and that they, you know, then have to, you know, they've had this really powerful skill, but now they've just got to be normal. And I mean, that's, like, that's life, like, that happens to people. And so I don't know, it is really difficult. Obviously Amon is the bad guy, obviously this is seen as, like, really torturous, and the Avatar's like, no, don't take my bending is the most important thing to me. But, like, maybe the entire society has the wrong attitude about bending, and, you know, maybe I'm Amon, guys. I don't know. Karen, how do you feel about the identity of bending, and whether, you know, the way that they act so kind of justified about it, I suppose?
I feel like bending is a huge part of somebody's identity. Like Danya was saying, you know, they've grown up that way. That's all they've ever known, is having these bending powers. When you take that away, I just feel like, I mean, the emo wolf bat guy, I don't even know his name.
Tano.
The
didn't
way.
Didn't you love his moment when they came in, like, Eurovision costumes?
That was, yeah, kind of crazy and terrifying.
Sorry. Carry
but
on.
He, you know, when Amon was taking his powers away, I felt absolutely terrible for him. I don't even like the guy. He was obviously a jerk. But to have that taken away from you, I can't even imagine what that must be like. I mean, we keep comparing it to Harry Potter. Like, what if you grew up your entire life with magic and all of a sudden, boom, it's taken away? I mean, I would feel like, okay, what would I do with myself?
I think the entire point is that the people in Harry, I get it. Like, you would feel terrible, but it's also created the attitude that the people in Harry Potter, the ones who, like, the non-Muggle ones, the ones who grew up in the Wizarding Society, literally think Muggles are, like, mentally disabled. Like, they are, like, they literally think they are second-class citizens who need to be either protected or eliminated, depending on what side of the fight that you're on. Hopefully not Voldemort.
Yeah.
But they literally, it's created the idea of magic as a right, or the idea of that having a superior ability as a right, as opposed to just something some people can do and something others can't, has literally created a society in Harry Potter where they think that Muggles, like us, are mentally disabled. If that is how people act about them.
I get that, but at the same time, look at our society. I mean, you have people who are exceptional singers, and you have people who are exceptional artists, and those people, while they have different talents, I feel like you know, they don't necessarily, depending on who they are as a person, think that they're better than, you know, that the singer thinks that they're better than the artist just because they're a singer. So I think it has a lot to do with, like, people's attitudes. And while sometimes, yeah, that attitude can develop because of the superior abilities and everything, it's not to say that non-benders don't have their own talents. And obviously the whole part of the season that we've seen so far is built around the fact that non-benders, or at least these equalists, do feel like the benders think they're superior. But I guess my argument would be that's not necessarily going to be the case with everybody. And it depends on a lot of, like, how you grew up and what you were taught and if you have respect for other human beings.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, I think that there's definitely... I'm not saying there's a case for Aman. I just think it's very easy to... Like, that scene, like, in the previous episode where they went to the meeting and you saw how many people were there, if you know what I mean, not just, like, a little weird ragtag group, that it was, like, so many people. I think that that is really representative of, you know, how easily people could come to challenge the status quo, especially about something that looks like, you know, privilege. Like, all those, it's such a difficult theme to deal with, that you're kind of trying to put people on the side of the quote unquote privileged, when maybe in society we wouldn't actually view this conflict this way. So it is really interesting to think about, though I do think that, you know, that, you know, it's not, you know, it's more than just having a, you know, skill bending. I think it is a very obviously physical inherent thing that would be traumatic. You know, it's certainly a like, it's not someone's fault whether they're born a bender or not, but I think that, you know, having that kind of actual part of your physical self removed would probably be relatively traumatic. So
plus, yeah. How much is that tied into your soul or your spirit? I mean, we know, yeah, as the Avatar that she needs to be spiritual, and that even Aang, you know, he was very spiritual in the way that he had to come into his powers and learn how to control them and the peace that he had within him. You know, if you take away bending, does that not... See, that kind of makes it sound like, oh, non-benders aren't spiritual. But I feel like the connection between being able to bend and being spiritual must be very close. So, again, just another layer of, like, how terrible that must feel to have your bending taken away.
Yeah, more than, like, Harry Potter, the thing that, like, this storyline reminded me most of was X-Men. And mutants and non-mutants, and then, you know, you, like, mutants fall into different, like, sides. So you've got, like, Magneto and the Brotherhood, and you've got the X-Men, and kind of them falling into that thing where, you know, like, a certain group of them do see themselves as superior, like, the next kind of...
evolution.
The next evolution, yeah, exactly, of humanity, whereas like the X-Men are more like, well no, it's just like it's a genetic mutation, we're just different. We're not better or no one is better than the other, we're just different people, we're different kinds of people with these abilities. So it's kind of that's the kind of thing that I kind of look at it against. If I was going to draw a comparison, it would be against, like, X-Men, and that kind of storyline that they tackle in, like, almost every single comic that they do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and there's just very, there's no matter, to me, just no matter which way you spin it, like, it's very, very, very difficult to get to a point where, you know, where there isn't a part saying, you know, you have more power than me in this way, and that is not super fair, if you know what I mean. And I don't know. I don't know why Aman is the way he is, or why he can do what he can do, which raises another question. Like, you know, he and Korra have that face off, and then, you know, but he still hasn't taken Korra's bending away. Like, they rigged the system so that they could get the wolf bats to win, like, you know, if the referees were paid off so that the wolf bats won and they took away the wolf bat spending, if they'd let Korra's team won, they could have tried to take away Korra's spending, and they didn't do that. So do we feel like that maybe he can't actually do anything to Korra because she's the Avatar and he's just, like, bluffing?
Well, the only thing we know about taking away people's bending is, what did they call it at the end of Avatar?
Spirit bending?
Okay, spirit bending.
Something? Made that up.
I think it's something close to that. But you have to have a stronger spirit or whatever than the other person. So maybe he's just worried that his spirit wouldn't be as strong as Korra's.
Yeah, true.
Because, I don't know if you guys heard this or anything, I think Amon is 200-year-old Fire Lord Ozai, and I think secretly that he's actually a bender.
Interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if secretly he was actually a bender. And I think Fire Lord Ozai is certainly a decent guess for that. Like, I think that that would be a logical theory at this point.
I really like that theory. I think I heard you guys talking about how you thought he was the bender because then he would be the only bender left, and so that would make him, like, the most powerful person ever.
What a,
like,
a dick.
Yeah, that would be great, and I can definitely see that being, like, his end game. Fire Lord Ozai, I would really like that, but I just feel like I don't think they're going to cater to us that much. I wish.
You never know.
Maybe it's Boomy.
Oh my god. Boomy. That would crush Brittany.
400-year-old Boomy or whatever, however old he is now. Yeah, I think that there are a lot of theories about Amon and why someone would do this or who he is and all of those kind of things. You know, he's certainly challenging the status quo and raising some interesting questions about privilege in society, but he's being very violent while doing it, so it's maybe not the right path, Amon, just saying. The other, apart from all of that, like, equalist nonsense, the biggest important part of this was the relationship between Tenzin and Lin Beifong, basically working together to help Korra, but we also find out...
Who cares about Korra?
We also find out via Tenzin's kind of lack of a poker face that the girl who Pema stole Tenzin from was Lin back in the day, and that, you know, Korra has a great scene with Tenzin about finding this out, and I just love Tenzin, literally everything he says ever. But yeah, how did you guys feel about that happening? So
okay. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I called this back in episode one, and I'm, like, so proud of myself. As soon as they walked in, I was like, ooh, there's some tension there. I feel the Zutara-ness going, okay? So I dig it so much. They are the only ship I care about on this show. Like, the other kids, they can just, like go. I feel like it's sort of like a Marvel thing. Like, I just want to see their TV show of Lin and Tenzin, so.
Why has this made you throw away Lin as Sokka's love child? Like, would that... Oh, because then they'd be related.
Yeah, because then they'd be cousins. Yeah. Yeah. It was a little icky. Although maybe that's why they grew apart.
I was kind of trying to do the math there, and I was like, oh, yeah, Katara, Sokka. Yeah, okay, I get you.
Yeah.
So I don't think Lin is Sokka's love child. But yeah, how did you feel, Karen, about learning that this was a thing, basically?
Not super surprised. but very sad. I felt really sad for Lin, and I like Pema, and I think that, you know, the little family that Tenzin has going on is really adorable, and I'm happy for him, but poor Lin, and I just, I don't know. I think this episode in particular, and, you know, the ending where we, obviously see her, like, protecting Korra and everything made me not respect her more, because I have respected her from the beginning. She's obviously, like, an incredible warrior and an incredible woman, but she, you see that softer side of her and you're like, oh, okay, I get this now. And I just, yeah, I felt really bad for her. I want to see her happy.
Do you think she's genuinely miserable about not having Tenzin? Or do you think she's just like, screw that guy and is just annoyed every time she has to deal with him? Or do you think she's like, pining and love?
I hope she's not miserable, because I hope that the writers of this show respect the women more than that. But yeah. I mean, I can see her being upset about it still. I mean, if you really care about somebody, but it has been a long time, I would think that even if she still has feelings for him, they would probably be fairly minor and, you know, something that she can just kind of work through. It's hard for me to believe that she's still hung up on him after all of these years.
Ariana, how about you?
I think they're both hung up on each other, to be perfectly honest.
Oh my God.
I don't know why they broke up. I can make assumptions about why they broke up. I don't know why.
Tenzin told you they were growing apart and blah, blah, blah. And he
oh, they were growing apart, distance, whatever.
He looked off into the distance and whatever. Like, you know.
Okay, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of Sean and Angela, who are coming on tonight on Girl Meets World. Obviously, nobody watches Boy Meets World. I know you're all foreign. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
But
I'm not foreign. Did you forget about me? Foreign.
God.
Gosh. Okay. Well, I just feel like with Lynn especially, you don't have that kind of, like, resentment unless there are still unresolved feelings. Like, if you're okay and you're like, I'm fine, I've moved on, then you're not, like, that kind of mad. She's mad at him all the time for no reason. She's just like, ugh, your presence irritates me.
Yeah.
I think she's mad at everyone all the time.
Well, she tried to arrest Pema. She, like, was like, I'm gonna blow this world up. You don't steal my boyfriend. I like her.
I love that, like, you know, Tenzin, you know, Cora being like, wow, I'm surprised Lynn didn't throw Pema in jail. And he was like, oh, she tried. So, yeah, are you hoping for
Tenzin? I can see her, like, using her metal bending to, like, take that place apart and just, like, try and wrangle her. Oh, she must have been so mad. I really like Lynn.
Let's cross our fingers for an interaction between Lynn and Pema at some point, then. Maybe Pema's, like, a super secret bitch, like, you know, like, that she, you know, it's because she seems all cute and stuff, but maybe she's, like, a super secret, like Regina George type character or something like that.
You can't sit with us.
Yeah. Lynn can't sit with them anymore, basically, so... Yeah.
I think my favorite part about them is that, like, their love can never be, like, it's like they're star-crossed, you know, because now he's married, and now she's just, like, they just have the tension there, which is what I obviously love, so. It's like Zuko and Katara.
Yeah.
They can never be together.
That's true. You raise a good point in the notes as well, saying Korra and her friends have got nothing in comparison to the epic saga of the gang's kids growing up and getting hot with each other. Where is that TV show? Which, yeah, honestly, they might not have wanted to go, like, they obviously wanted to follow the story of another Avatar, not just the story of, like, Aang and his, like, family. But, God, it would have been good to have, like, you know, all of the gang's, you know, children growing up and you know, who dated who and, you know, experimentation at parties and, like, oh, I see him in the summer when we go to, like, the Fire Nation, and every summer he gets hotter and I just don't know how to deal with it, and, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that would have been really fun and amazing. So yeah,
all I started thinking about,
I think that'll be my next fan fiction, so, now that I've been introduced to it. I'll go
cool I think that you should write one.
What I started thinking about when you were talking about the, like, showing up in the summer in the Fire Nation kind of thing, yeah, was the Swan Princess, the animation, if you've ever seen that.
Oh my God, I love that show, that movie.
I know.
And he's like, oh, she's gross. Never mind, she's beautiful.
Yeah, it was just, that's all I could think about.
In that extended conversation between Tenzin and Cora about you know, about why Lynn, you know, oh, why does Lynn hate you, or, you know, why does Lynn have such a beef with me? Does she hate Aang? We learn that, no, that Lynn and Aang got along, quote-unquote, famously. So why do you think that is? Like, you know, don't seem like super complimentary personalities, but, oh, we've got a theory here that she does have a touch of angry Zuko in her. Maybe she's Zuko's love child, but that's so much less exciting than Tokka's love child. Maybe she's Zuko's love child, but let's remember that Aang knew this girl as a baby. Like, so she, this is one of the people that helped raise her, presumably. And she probably was, like, he probably thought her, like, little, like, stubborn. And she, maybe she wasn't angry till Tenzin dumped her. Like, you know, maybe she was, like, stern, but, like, maybe she's, like, a McGonagall type, like, kind of a nerdy, quiet, like, you know, powerful figure, not, like, a angry, mean one. So maybe, you know, Aang thought she, her little, like, her solemn little metal bending was adorable, like, and maybe he brought out good things in her, like a cheerful uncle, and that isn't that the sweet idea to think about, like tiny little Lynn, who's like this serious faith baby, and Aang being like, come on baby, be happy, isn't that cute? And now Aang's dead.
That's precious. Oh,
thanks, Natalie.
Yeah. I don't know, like, yeah, so how does it make you feel, I guess, to think about, like, you know, the kids and, you know, the gang and how these people, these characters that we're watching, like Tenzin and Lynn, not just, you know, not just the children of them, but literally thinking about them being raised by them. Like, who do you think had the best parenting skills?
Katara, obviously, because she was already a mom.
I suppose that's true. Ugh. I mean, Tenzin's okay. She did an okay job with him, I suppose. He's a bit uptight. He probably gets that from her, I'm not going to lie.
I can't see Toph being... I mean, I'm sure Toph was, like, a fine mom, but I can't see her being, like, super motherly.
No, I feel like she would have been quite... Not absent, but not exactly your typical...
I think she would have been a fun mom. Mother. Like, one of those, like, yeah, let's just have a food fight for the heck of it type of thing.
But, I mean, like, we think she's fun because we like to watch her. But if you think back to her interaction, she's kind of, like, mean. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not the nicest she would have person.
Been like, maybe she would have been, like, Victoria Argent, Karen. Like, like real stern, but, like, loving, but real, like... real abrupt.
I don't know.
And
that's
like...
that's an extreme case. I don't think I'd
maybe
go
not as crazy.
Far.
I mean, more attitude wise, not like werewolf crazy wise. But anyway,
like terrifying cookie baking and stuff.
Yeah. Or maybe she just would have been more like Edie. Like, sorry, we're getting into like not another Teen Wolf territory now, but maybe she would have been like more like Edie as a person rather than Victoria as a person.
I could get behind that.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
I don't know what any of this means.
Don't worry, never mind. We're just talking about Teen Wolf. So the last important thing of the episode was that when Korra had her whole fainting fit, that she had another flashback to a period during Aang's life. And it's not the first time, like I hope that everyone has noted that already, that we noted it in the past episodes, that basically in these moments where she's like freaking out, she's getting flashbacks to these... to Aang, and we see shots of different characters like adult Sokka and Toph and stuff, and it all seems to be set around a very specific, like, memories of a very specific period. So what did everyone catch in there? Did you guys notice anything specific this time?
It happens too fast. I'm really, like, I need stills. Or, like, somebody, maybe this exists, somebody needs to put together, like, a video of the flashback, or maybe we'll actually get it in the show, I don't know, but it all happens so fast, and I happened to catch Toph, and then Aang, obviously, but it was like, was that really them? They look so different, because they're grown up, and I don't know, it was hard to really, glean anything from it.
No, yeah, it was them.
Yeah, I know it was them, I'm just like, they look so different.
And it's interesting because we never really had Aang having, like, crazy flashbacks to, like, the life of someone else. Like, he certainly had interactions with other avatars, but he never had, like, a moment of...
Sorry. All those people were dead. Like, the people that Grogu would have known would all be dead. Like, I feel like she gets things. Doesn't she get these usually when she's around Amon?
So, I don't know. She gets them when she's, like, passing it out, like, or whatever.
I feel like these, I wish I paid more attention, but I guess I don't care enough to, like, pause each little scene. But I feel like these probably hold a clue as to who Amon is.
I will tell you that it has already been mentioned in the show what you're seeing. I'll give you that. The show has already, the memories Korra is having, the circumstance surrounding them has already been mentioned in the show. So if you care to go back and watch or research and pick that apart, I will tell you that. It's not coming out of nowhere. The pieces have actually been slotted into place if you know where to look for them. So I'll give you that, if that is of any interest to anyone.
Dun, dun, dun.
I just like seeing them, like, being adults, and it's weird. It's weird that they're, like, because they're, I guess they're serving on, like, they definitely look like everyone's kind of standing up in, like, an official capacity, like, in their council room or, like, a courtroom or something like that.
Wait, is this the one that had Sokka? I thought I saw Sokka in this one, or is that the other one?
I think he was in the other one. He's definitely in at least one of them.
I know because of his ponytail.
And then, so what were we saying? Aang, memories, etc. So I wonder if they were, like, you know, the way that they have the council with Tenzin and everyone, you know, a person from the Southern Water Tribe, Northern Water Tribe, etc., etc., wondered about whether we, you know, whether Aang and Toph, etc., were, like, the council for the time when they lived there, which would have been interesting. Like, imagine giving those kids all that power and a whole city to run. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. So, anything else from this episode before we go on to the favourite scenes and quotes? All good? All right. My favourite moment, besides from every single second of Tenzin existing, especially his reactions at the probe ending and his reactions talking about Lin and then being mad that Korra caught him out, and literally every second that he breathes in this fictional Earth. Aside from all of those moments, my favourite was Lin's, like, Spider-Man aerial ballet, acrobatic ropes course, like, around the arena to, like, save Korra when she's, like, whipping around with the metal bending and, like, going hard, and, like, her legs are all spinny, and it's just really cool, and she's great. So that was my favorite moment. Yeah, it was so good. I loved it so much. How about you, Karen?
Mine was when Mako and Bolin and Korra were like, oh my god, we're trapped, we're all tied to this, like, pillar or whatever, how are we gonna get out? And then the camera just pans over and Pabu's just swimming in the water, like, I'll save you guys.
He's coming. Yeah. He's coming.
It was so cute.
And then he chews them free.
Yes, and Bolin talks to him. So ridiculous.
I love him so much. All right, Ariana, what was your favorite moment of the episode?
Okay, so obviously it was when Tenzin and Lin were revealed to be, like, star-crossed soulmates, because they're my new shit forever now, and I'm just, like, obsessed with Lin. I think she's the coolest, and she might have to be my new Azula now, since there's no one else that's cool. So I love them. And they should definitely, like, have an affair.
Oh, is it the ship version?
I'm just kidding. That would ruin their personalities. But what?
Is it the ship version of your forever girl?
Oh my god. Yes. It's
your forever girl ship.
Tenzin and Lin are my forever girl ship. You know it. You know it. They're so repressed and so in love.
We're going to talk about this beautiful graphic you've put in, or is that just for us?
Yeah, I'll retweet it out. But Pema is definitely a home-wrecking whore. That is for sure. Yeah, and she's, like, a lot younger than them, right? I can just imagine Lin being like, who is this basic bitch, this 20-year-old coming up, stealing my man? Who does she think she is?
I mean, I do see your point. I do see your point. Yeah. I think she's a little younger than them. Lin definitely looks more, you know, battle-worn by life. And if you think about it, Pema was, like, an air acolyte, so she was, like, a... I don't know if you kind of have because they live on that Air Temple Island, right? Now, I don't know how much you know about this, but it's kind of in the comics, and you kind of, you can either, like, know it, but the show doesn't explain it, but the Air Temple Island, like, they've kind of not repopulated, like, the airbenders, because obviously you have to be a bender to have more bender babies. I don't think there are any, like, muggle-born benders, but they've definitely taken on, like, air monks, like, not like non-bending air acolytes, basically, so people who, like, do the teachings of that culture and stuff like that. And Pema certainly lives within that culture, and if she was already living within that culture when she met Tenzin, it would have been like she was like a creepy fan, like a creepy airbender fangirl, if you know what I mean. Like,
that's exactly what she is. She's a creepy, like, airbender, like, fangirl, like one of Aang's fangirls.
Like, interesting, if you read the comics, the Aang's fangirls are actually how that whole thing starts. So go and read the comics, everyone. They tell really interesting canon stories that tie into things, not in a way that will prevent you from watching the show, but means that I can give weird explanations like this. But yeah, no, I like Pema. I don't think she's a home-wrecking whore, but I do see all the points that lead in that direction, basically.
I mean, they said, I don't know if they ever say why they're growing apart, but I'm assuming it's probably because they're both, like, so freaking smart and cool and had their own jobs and probably didn't get to spend a lot of time together, except when they were having, like, really hot reunion sex. But, like,
it's so,
you know,
is
she
it,
probably...
Is it like a college professor leaving his wife for, like, the hot student in his, like,
that's,
you know,
exactly what it is.
Like,
yeah,
spike,
because
you
he's,
know,
like, you know, class. And she's like, you know, I'll give you lots of babies. I'm 20. And he's like, okay.
I don't know if she's meant to be that much younger. I don't know if it's just like Lin wears her life on her face and Pema leads a beautiful, pure life of being an air acolyte, so she looks slightly less aged. But I do see your point.
I looked it up because I was curious. I didn't look at the spoiler, but I did look at the ages because I was like, are Tenzin and Lin the same age? Because she does look, she has like the gray hair, but he's like bald. Mm. And they are the same age. And she's like, she's like 15 years younger. She's quite a bit younger.
Oh, really? Jesus. Okay. Never mind that. There's totally an adult drama to be had with these people. Like, you could totally write like an adult, like an Avatar The Last Airbender After Dark, like, moment. Like, you know, like one that, you know, plays, like, you know, on Nick at Night or something. That's, like, the adult story that's, you know, more deals with the, like, home-wrecking whore situation.
Okay, I didn't realize until Ariana said it, but there is, like, a massive age gap. I didn't realize it. Pema,
I mean, she certainly looks young, a bit younger. Like, she definitely looks younger than Lin, so...
Pema is 35. And Tenzin is 51.
Interesting.
And yeah, and they've already been married for, like, at least 10 years. They had the kids.
So she would have been, like, 25.
Yes, she was in her 20s. Oh, my God. Yes. That's creepy, guys. She's a fangirl. She's like those... She's like an NSYNC fangirl or, like, a Backstreet Boys fangirl, like, chasing after. Oh, my gosh. Yes, she is a homewrecking whore. I don't like her now.
Oh, she's God. So sweet, though.
I know.
It's all a charade. Didn't you see how she was so proud? She's like, yeah, I stole him. Whatever. He's the Avatar son. He's the last airbender. That's fine.
No, she definitely, did, like, she was an air acolyte, so she definitely met him by being, like, a student of Aang's family. So that's not weird. Now I feel uncomfortable. This is weird. I don't like it. Like, she's so cute. It's so weird. Oh. And so, yeah, she would have been like, oh, that hot older man. He's so... And she got the only...
She's the only airbender
to reproduce. Like, my kids are going to be real airbenders. I am the best air fangirl ever. Like,
yes!
Oh.
That's exactly it. Oh, my gosh. I'm totally team
Lily
on this one.
I don't know if I am because I love Pema, but I now feel quite unsettled. I feel like I could easily get some weird headcanons going here that would make me very uncomfortable.
As an aside, as I'm already on Pema's page on the Avatar Wikipedia, her eye color is described as asparagus green.
What the hell? That is some Sue shit. Sorry. that's weird. Maybe we should move on from this ridiculousness because it is making me somewhat uncomfortable. Karen, how do you feel?
I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely looking at Pema a little bit differently now, but I still think she's super sweet, so I'll just have to see what happens. I definitely feel, like, way worse for Lynn, though.
Yeah, true. Yeah, this little hot little piece of ass, you know, coming in on his, like, you know, office hours at college and being like,
oh my God, you know so much about life.
Lynn's worst nightmare. Like, is my guy going to get stolen by this little 20-something who shows her tits whenever, you know?
Okay, we're definitely going Tanya, down.
What was your favorite moment of the episode?
My favorite moment in the episode was when, like, Lynn and Cora, like, team up on, like, the ceiling part of the pro bending arena and, like, kick some serious ass. The other bit that I really, really like is obviously when the glass gives way underneath Cora and she starts falling, that Lynn chooses between, like, going after Amon and, like, using her metal bending to, like, swing down and save Cora, and she goes and she saves Cora. Like, I love that moment where it's, like, he's right there. They could potentially either find out who he is or try and stop him or whatever, and she's just like, that's not the most important thing right now. The most important thing is saving Cora, and I love that.
Yeah, no, I really like Lynn and her choices as well in this. Yeah. In this episode, basically. Oh my God, I forgot. Sorry, I just remembered something really random that's going to come up in the show that is incredibly weird. That won't even be that exciting to anyone else except that I just remembered it. Never mind that. We'll go on to our favorite quotes. My favorite, as priorly mentioned, it's really hard for me not to pick the commentary guy, and this time I have picked the commentary guy. I like when he's commentating the pro benders who basically, yeah, we'll talk about the fact that they all have gloves now that can take away the bending, allegedly, or that they can zap, at least electrify people and zap them. Just, you know, like they're getting weaponized against the benders, basically. So when the, basically, it's like, Ariana, it's like, did it remind you in the pro bending thing, did it remind you of, like, in Marine when they all start putting on the gold harpy mask, if you know what I mean? Like, you know, when he looks around in the crowd and it's like, oh my God, everyone's got the masks. And it's like, oh my God, all of these traitors around me, we're coming to kill the Khaleesi. Like, that's basically what happened.
I'll be 100% honest. I was, like, not super paying attention because I was, like, too involved with Lynn and Tenzin, like, and they're buzzing eyes at each other.
Sorry. Well, it was very... very similar. But anyway, when he basically in the pro bending match, when everyone starts like putting on their Equalis masks and getting out their zapping gloves, the commentator is telling everyone what happens. Basically on one level, it's hilarious. And on the other level, I found it somewhat moving. He's basically in, you know, he's saying, oh, they're getting out these, you know, masks, gloves, and then he's like, one of them is in the booth with me right now, folks. He's leveling one of those glove devices at me now, and I believe he is about to electrocute me. I am currently wetting my pants. On one level, it's really funny. And then my friend who I was watching it with reminded me of another thing which actually made it really moving. And Donya, you'll understand this. The others may not as much. It basically kind of reminded me of the drive, I guess, of good journalism. There's this bit in one of the, like a BBC documentary, basically, where they're out in, like, the Arctic Circle or something, and the guy, like, the camera person or the commentator is kind of like, there's a massive storm coming and the notifications are for us to get the hell out of here, but we're going to stay and film it because we're the BBC. And I went on a tour of the BBC building in London as well, and they actually played us a clip of someone doing the radio report in the Second World War and a bomb falling on the building. And basically, like, he kind of pauses, like, they played a recording of the guy kind of doing his news report, literally has maybe a 3 second pause while the bomb hits, and then he just keeps going like completely straight, like not missing it. And it's basically this really kind of, I guess, like traditional journalistic ethic to kind of keep going with that above all things. And so it kind of gave me weird feels about that while also being hilarious. I hope that that makes a modicum of sense, but yeah.
Oh my God, I think I know the exact thing that you're talking about, because I don't know if I've been on the tour, but we did a lot of like World War II kind of stuff when I was like still in like comprehensive school. And we listened to a load of like news broadcasts, especially from stuff like the Blitz and that kind of thing. And either we've listened to the same one, or we've listened to some like very, very similar ones, because I imagine it probably wasn't an isolated event. But
yeah.
Oh, now that you've said
just the idea of basically kind of the journalistic ethic or journalistic drive to kind of stay and report even in physical danger to itself. It's like a really kind of specific and long-running heroism thing that gives me a lot of feels, and this was a very funny circumstance of that particular situation. But I don't know if it was meant to be as emotional as I'm making it, but I have specific memories that sort of got sparked by this. So anyway, let's move on from that. I think Karen's quote is very appropriate for that entire spiel that I just said.
Well, okay, so my quote is during the interaction between Korra and Tenzin, when Korra's kind of, well, she's figured out what was going on between Tenzin and Lin, and she's like, oh, you know, I'm surprised that Lin didn't try to shove Pema in jail, and Tenzin's like, well, she tried, and, you know, we've been growing apart for some time, we both had different goals in life, and the music starts swelling, and you're like, wow, this is gonna be, like, this great reveal of, like, what happened in their past, and then it cuts off, and he's like, why am I even telling you this? And it's that really, like, over-animated sort of, like, he's yelling at her, and, like, his facial features get really stretched out, and it's just, it's perfect. I love Tenzin so much.
I love him, but yeah, why am I even telling you this is probably an appropriate response to my unnecessary BBC story. But never mind. I just, that whole scene though of him talking about Lin and the musical cues as well are very funny. Like, they're perfect. Very well done. So yeah. Ariana, how about you?
Mine was when they're in the arena and Lin and Tenzin, I think they were talking about, I don't even remember what.
Let's
I think
it was like working together. Let's work together and protect Korra just for this one night. For this one night, let's work together. Yes.
And then she's like old times. And those bedroom eyes they gave each other. Ooh. The heat is still there, guys. I think Pema better watch out.
Oh, God. No wonder she's popping out so many babies. She's got to keep him interested. My you know what I mean? God. Every time that might be a bit of a risk, it's like, get pregnant again.
Can you imagine? Lin is probably like every one of those babies. She's just like, that woman is with my man. Ooh.
Jesus. Maybe Aang was a factor. Here, I've got a theory. Maybe Aang was like Tenzin. Maybe he had to marry a non-bender for like the good of the family. And Aang's like, Tenzin.
But Aang didn't do that. I mean, that makes sense. Because they could accidentally have
Earthbenders. Airbender. If you marry a non-bender, all your children will be airbenders. Whereas if you marry some earthbender, you might waste the airbender line and just get all these airbender babies. I mean, not that Aang took that advice himself. He married stupid fucking Katara. But,
okay.
You know.
What they could have done is, I mean, he could marry Lin or be with her or whatever, and then, you know, he has all those fangirls, that's what they're there for, like, you know, so they can propel the line. Airbender. Yes, they can use him as a breeder. That's Jesus. What they should do. And have like an island.
Okay, we have to, this is insane. Let's let I just, this is so gross and I can't even think about it. So Donya, your final quote for the episode that's hopefully not about using Tenzin as a breeder.
I'm trying to compose myself because I was laughing. I had myself on mute so that I wouldn't, like, laugh over everything. Because the breeder comment just set me off. I was, like, mildly, hilariously horrified. Like a winning stallion. Oh, God. But, my
wow, a winning stallion.
Oh, God. My favorite line was also from the radio commentator, again, because... I just love him beyond words, but it was when he was going, "What an unbelievable move! These ferrets aren't just bending the elements, they're bending my mind!"
Woo! I just find it hysterical. Like, I love the pre-war BBC, like, radio tone, like, the radio tone of voice that you had to use, and I just find the entire thing hysterical. I find anything done in that commentary unnecessarily funny, so, yeah. We'll move on to listener feedback. We'll do the contact information again in case you missed it. If you want to email us any feedback about this episode, it's rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Twitter is re_watchable. You can comment on this post on Hyperball for the podcast, or you can reach us on Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast. You can also leave us an iTunes review because that helps keeps the show alive and relevant and happy, and iTunes thinks that we're a real thing. But if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will cook you some Flamio instant noodles, the noodliest noodles in the Republic. So, yeah, you ready for that one, Karen?
Yes, I will come up with my own concoction and do a little cooking show, cooking Flamio instant noodles.
Cool. All right. So we've got a couple of pieces of feedback here. We'll just go down the list. I'll do there's 4, so we'll just do one each. Go down the list in the same order of the quotes. So the first one was just Gordon, a Toonie Chopper Man, saying, "On a scale of 1 to soccer face palm, how over Cora's bullheaded naivety are you? #, I have a subdural hematoma." And we've added the image of the secret tunnel man saying, "To Sokka, nobody react what I'm about to tell you. I think General Iroh is related to Zuko," and Sokka having a red spot on his head from the amount of times that he has face-palmed his face. I don't know, guys, how over Korra's bullheaded naivety are you?
I don't hate it, actually. I kind of like that sort of strangely innocent character about her. Maybe it's gonna get old in the future, but for right now I'm kind of entertained by it.
I don't blame her for it. I blame Aang for not like letting her experience the world, locking her up in her ice princess tower.
I probably agree with that, actually. I think that she did get locked. She's like Rapunzel. She's like, you know, she's like, it's like Tangled. She's out in the world. You know, she doesn't know, like, not to hang out with, like, thieves or, like, wear shoes and stuff like that. You know? She's, like, you know, Aang was basically Mother Gothel. So, yeah.
And, like, her obsession with Mako makes sense. He's, like, the first guy she's seen, her age. And he's gorgeous. So, of course, she's going to be like, "I think we're soulmates."
Yeah. All right. Is Karen, do you want to do the next one?
Yeah. So this next one's from Matthew Tadros, MJ Tadros on Twitter, and he just says, "Mako cleans up nice. Swoon." Definitely not going to disagree with that because, yes, he does.
Yes. True. Anya? Oh, no, Ariana. Sorry.
So Lynn Walker it's Lynn, told us, "I think I know what #" the thing is, and I'm really sad that the newbies already know. I know what the thing is. I don't know if you guys know what the thing is, but I know
what the thing is.
Is #, the thing, a Mitch thing?
I think
yes,
so.
But you know what the thing is.
I'm assuming we all know what the thing is. We all know what the thing is. But, interesting. I'll say this cryptically then. If you guys know what # the thing is, has anything that you've seen on the show so far, like, is it ruining your experience of the show so far? Or do you feel like you're still really curious about it and it's not actually deterring from what you are currently seeing.
Still really curious. I don't think it's changing my opinion at all, actually.
Yeah.
I don't either. I stand by all my theories.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's not being influenced at all by the thing. The only thing about the thing, knowing it, was one line in particular was really amusing. And I wrote it down, but obviously I couldn't use it because it was like a spoiler for the thing.
Oh, okay. I'm curious. You'll tell me as soon as we finish recording.
Yes.
Because I want to know. And then
I want to know as well.
Oh, Donya, do you want to just do the last one? And then we'll sign off and then Ariana can tell us what the thing is.
Yes, so this is from a hypeable comment by Daniel Stewart, who says, I never noticed it before, but the statue is Zuko. If you look, you can definitely see a dark kind of red mark around his eye. It would make sense that he would be honored in this way because he did co-found Republic City with Aang.
Well, there's definitely a statue of Aang in the harbor, so I think there's a statue of Zuko in the harbor as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's what they mean. Yeah. Yeah, sad dead people, maybe. All right, so that's it for this week. We'll leave, and I'm really sorry about all of the breeding Tenzin air fangirl home.
I'm not sorry.
Nonsense. Hashtag sorry, not sorry. Sorry to anyone who we've scarred for life with all of that, but, you know, until next time, you'll just, you know, have to deal with it, I suppose. So, bye-bye, and we'll see you all. We'll be getting on to the next episodes in a week's time. So, I am Natalie.
I'm Karen.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Donya.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi everyone, welcome to Rewatchable episode 113, a special Not Another Teen Wolf podcast edition of Rewatchable. No, that's a joke, in case you're just like, no, turning that shit off. Oh my god, sorry.